podcasting on JerusalemCast.com. Daily Gemara Shir in Sanhedrin. Bezrat Hashem. We're on Tet Zayin, Amud Aleph, 16a. We are about two-thirds of the way down the page. About 10-15 lines up at the bottom. Ein Motziin. So we have to go back to the Mishnah to see what exactly this Ein Motziin quote is. Sometimes the Gemara gives us a bigger quote, sometimes it gives us a couple of words. Ein Motziin. So the Mishnah on Daf Bet Amud Aleph tells us that Ein Motziin l'milchemet ha-rashut. We don't go out to a milchemet ha-rashut. What's a milchemet ha-rashut?
I don't know, you don't have to, not necessarily obligated to go.
So it means a permissible war, one that you're not obligated to do. Yeah. Okay, so that's what the simple meaning is. So, as Rabbi Yoel says, what does it mean?
If you decided to go to war?
The Mepharshim say that the all wars, thank you, are Milchemet Rishut. They're all permissible, apart from the ones we got obligated. Which were the ones we got obligated? Amalek. Only two. The war against Amalek, and the war against the Canaanite nations in the land. Right, Hashem said, go into the land and drive out all of the nations in there. So we didn't have any choice. That's an obligation. Right? Hashem said to do. He also said to fight Amalek in each generation. So their obligations. Everything else, it's not a Torah commandment to kill anyone else, unless the only other place is that we are commanded is where they come after you. If someone comes after you to kill you, you're obligated by the Torah to go and kill him first. So then, again, it's not discretionary.
What about if they're
we kill them, but it's not a war. It's not considered to be a war.
So that means we need to carpet bomb Hamas and the Plishtim.
At least. Yeah. So you could have a discussion whether that's milchemet reshut or an obligation. They're coming to kill you, you have to kill them first. Tom. Okay. So everything else is a reshut. So what does the Mishnah tell us? So Mishnah tells us Ein Motziin. We don't go out to a permissible war, a discretionary war. Ella, except our pi beitin shel shivim echad, except through the mouth, through the agreement of the beitin of 71. The Sanhedrin of 71 has to agree before we go on a discretionary war. That's what the Mishnah tells us. Okay, so back to our Gemara. Gemara wants to know, but always wants to know here too, Mahane Mile, where do you learn it from? Sounds good, but I need a source in the Torah that tells me that that's true, that you're not allowed to go to war without the permission of the Sanhedrin. So we have the answer now. Amar Rabbi Abahu says we learn it from the following. Damakra, because it says in the verse from the verse says V'lifnei Elazar HaKohen Ya'amod. So the verse begins by saying Lifnei Elazar HaKohen Ya'amod, before Elazar the Kohen you will stand. Right, so that's just the intro, that's the beginning of the verse, but actually the Gemara is going to now find the source for what we need in the end of this verse. So you actually need the rest of the verse, otherwise it doesn't make sense. So the rest of the verse, for those who have, I don't know, certainly in the art school, I don't think you haven't got the Torah verses in your one. So the rest of the verse reads like this. So in the art school it's verse Zion in the Torah Pasukim, but I'll read it out. It says, V'lifnei Elazar HaKohen, right, before Elazar HaKohen, Ya'amod, he will stand. V'sha'allah, and ask Sha'allah for Mishpat Ha'orim, and he will ask a ruling from the Urim. What's the Urim? Urim and Tumim. The
breastplate from the Kohen Gadol.
Right. So how do you ask a breastplate for a ruling? What happens?
It. Each stone glows.
Each type of filth.
So my understanding, I'm not exactly very experienced in it, but my understanding is like Rabbi Yaakov says over here, that the stones glow, and the letters that make up the tribe form a word, and you take the letters and you understand the meaning from the glow in the stones on those letters.
Which wall?
It's
two walls they have to go.
Right, so we're saying.
Then they ask which tribe to first.
Ah, no, so here we're not talking about, here we're talking about war they don't have to go to war. Only a possible, an obligated war where you have to go to war, so you don't ask. You don't need to ask for the. Because you have to go, you're obligated. Maybe. But you don't have to ask permission to go to the war.
I mean, when
Hamas... Here he's saying, here we're not trying to learn that. Here we're trying to learn a discretionary war. A war that, right? So in a discretionary war, the Mishnah says you have to ask the Sanhedrin first. So we want to know why, where you learn that from.
But why do you have to ask the Sanhedrin? And then they ask the Uthman.
So the question about asking the Urim and Thummim, clearly now we can't ask the Urim and Thummim anyway. They lost the Urim, or they hid them, or they were taken away.
And now I have the biggest source. I not go to Sanhedrin, I go direct to...
But the Mishnah doesn't say that before you go out to a discretionary war, ask the Urim and Thummim. It says go and ask the Sanhedrin. You don't need to ask the Urim and Thummim. They did! But it's not the halacha.
I understand Sanhedrin say yes, we go to war.
Right.
Then they ask the Turin which.
Okay,
with
maybe.
Not seems to be.
Maybe.
Like this light this old, this was the Aleph, this was the Ben.
Why? So where do we learn from? So we learn from Shmuel, Hannah. Hannah, when she prayed, right, we learn the Lord's Prayer from Hannah, nachon? When Hannah prayed. What happened when Hannah prayed? Eli, the high priest, comes over to her and says to her, what? You're drunk. And she says, no, I'm not. So if you look in the commentary there, I think in the art scroll, you can see it too. The art scroll commentary on the bottom of that page. It says, why does Eli come and say she's drunk? Because it says over there, because he's consulted the Urim and Tumim, and the letters of Shikor came up. Shin Kuf Resh. And he thought that she was drunk. But as the commentary says there on the bottom of the page. But actually he got it wrong. Because he took those letters and made shikor. But actually, he understood them wrong. Actually, there's two different explanations of what it should have read. You could, one of the explanations, Lina, is that it should have said kesher. That she was connected to Hashem. It wasn't shikor. It was kesher, kishor. And the other explanation is that something to do with Sarah. Sarah, I don't know, they stood for something else, but he read it wrong. Why did he read it? So he got the letters, but you learn from there that he got the letters from the Urim and Thummim.
But he didn't
know what to do with them.
Why did he read it wrong?
He didn't have the correct Ruach HaKodesh, I don't know, Hashem, I don't know. Tough, but...
I mean, that's critical, because you can't make a mistake like that if it for a discretionary war.
But we're not talking about asking the Urim and Thummim. We're just talking about here what happened in this case. The Mishnah doesn't say you need to ask the Urim and Thummim. Why are we talking about the Urim and Thummim? It just happens to be that in the past we're talking about they did. They knew what they were doing and they did. But we don't have to do that. Right? The Mishnah doesn't say do that. Right? We just have to ask the Sanhedrin. That's our level. Our level is you take 71 guys, you sit them down in a room, they discuss, and when they agree, they agree. We're not to the level of looking up stones and we don't even have them. But
well, actually, we do from the Temple Institute. But getting back to the discretionary war,
yes.
Say like we wanted to take back our tribal territories up north and
yes.
all the way to Tyre,
yes.
or past Tyre.
Yes.
You know, would that be a discretionary war?
Could be. I don't know.
Well, actually, Hezbollah probably. It's not a discretionary war. Since they've been firing missiles at it.
Right. Could be. I don't know. It could also be. I know. It could be. I don't know. You have to ask somebody who knows stuff, not me. Okay, so the blessed, so the, this is the, we're in the middle of the passage. So the passage mm-hmm. said that he will stand before Eleazar the Kohen and ask from the Urim and Tumim, Lifnei Hashem, before Hashem, Alpiv Yetzu, on his word they will go out, meaning on the word of Hashem. Va'alpiv Yaba'u, and on his word, I'm just reading from the Pasuk, Pasuk Zion, in the page Tet Zion Amud Aleph. The bottom passage is what we're learning now. So he says, and on his word they'll go out to war and they'll come back in on the word of Hashem. Who v'chol b'nei Yisrael ito v'chol eda, him and all of b'nei Yisrael ito with him. And all of the Ada. Now the Gemara is now going to learn out from these last words. Which words? The words who, meaning him. V'cholat b'nei Yisrael. Apparently means all b'nei Yisrael. We're going to see it doesn't. With him. V'chol Ada. All the Ada. We're going to learn from those few words at the end. That you go out to war with. So the Gemara says, who. The word who that we just read at the end of that pasuk, Zemelech, that's the king. That's talking about the king. The king is the one who's asking the question. The king is the one who came to the Kohen Gadol. Eleazar here was the Kohen Gadol. So the king came to the Kohen Gadol and asked the Urim and Tumim whether or not they should go to war. So who Zeh Melech? Chol b'nei Yisrael ito, all of b'nei Yisrael with him. Zu Meshuach Milchama. Again? It's in the pasuk. It's in Bamidbar.
Yes, it says where.
Ah, it's good. You've got it. So, what are we saying here? So. Right, so the king comes to the Kohen Gadol and asks the question. So who Zeh Melech? V'chol b'nei Yisrael ito, all of b'nei Yisrael ito. Zeh Meshuach Melchama. That doesn't mean all of Am Yisrael. Actually means the Meshuach Melchama. What's the Meshuach Melchama? The one who is anointed for battle. What's the one anointed for battle? Do you know who he is? Rabbi Eliezer? Anointed
special,
for battle.
Special Kohen.
Special Kohen. A special Kohen is anointed for battle.
Pinchas.
Huh?
Pinchas.
Could it be Pinchas?
Pinchas was the first.
Was the first Meshuach?
Yeah.
Okay, he was. Okay. So he was the first one. So what do we see? So there's a Kohen Gadol. He's got a specific job. He stays in the Beit HaMikdash and doesn't leave there and doesn't go out to war. He stays there. He's got a job to do. But another Kohen is charged with being head of the army. What does he do? So he gets anointed specifically for the job with oil, just like the Kohen Gadol gets anointed. So he too gets anointed, but for a different job, to take people out to battle. Right? There's a time to serve Hashem and there's a time to go out to battle. You need a leader in both cases. So this one's anointed, that one's anointed. What does he do? He rouses the troops, gives them chizuk. Specifically in the Second Lebanon War, just recently, there's lots of cases of Breslovers, particularly other Kirov organizations too, but particularly Breslov, which is very big on going out to the army bases on the borders and giving them chizuk before they went in. They went out, they took Sifrei Torah, they would dance with the troops and give Chizuk, Hashem is with you, you don't have to worry about anything. And Mamash did an amazing job. Right? But the president is from here. This is what the this Kohen Gadol he would say specifically that Gemara says, I can't remember which Gemara it's in, but the Gemara says what he would say to them. He would say a specific thing, and it's written in the Gemara what he would say. He would say, Hashem is with you, and you should not worry about anything. And so,
I have a YouTube video on that. It's called Miracle in Gaza.
Yeah.
And about all the miracles, I have a whole post about all the miracles that happened in Gaza, such as Rocco Omeno.
Right.
Such as, no one got injured,
right.
Except probably a scratch or two.
Right.
All the bullets flying and explosives and everything else like that.
Right.
And then the rainbows coming out.
Oh, yeah. I agree too. Yeah, similar. Okay, so the reference there to Rechov Bnei Yisrael, that actually refers to the Kohen anointed for the battle. Tov. And the third reference there, the Kol Ha'eda, Zeh Sanhedrin. That's the Sanhedrin. So what does it show us? So the Gemara wants to bring, or Rav Abahu wants to show us, that we can learn from here that the Sanhedrin needs to be consulted before going out to battle. That the king is the one who leads Am Yisrael to battle, so to speak. So the king goes to the Kohen Gadol and asks the Urim and Thummim, but also the Sanhedrin too. The Sanhedrin is there. So the Gemara doesn't ask, well, what about the Urim and Thummim and the Kohen Gadol? They apparently appear to be part of the process. You need three of them. You need the Kohen Gadol, the Urim and Thummim, and the Sanhedrin from that verse. All three of them are there. Well, why are you saying, from here we learn, you need to go to the Sanhedrin before you go to the war? So the Gemara doesn't ask that. The Mephoreshim do.
The time from Yeshua, he asked Hashem.
Sorry?
Yeshua.
Yeah.
The time he was asking Hashem.
Who was asking Hashem?
Go to the war. Hashem said to him, go to war.
If it was an obligatory war against the nations of the land, then that's fine, because it's not, he doesn't have to go to the Sanhedrin. Only a discretionary war.
But it's an obligatory war if we're being attacked.
Yes. So if we're being attacked, we don't have to worry about the Sanhedrin.
One
uh-huh.
Of I. So he not asked he made a pact.
They lied and then pretended that they were. Okay. So, but anyway, so apart from the fact that the Gemara doesn't ask that, but it brings instead a different question on that. It brings the following question on what we just said. V'dil Mala Sanhedrin, who. Maybe Rahmana, meaning Hashem, brought the need for the Sanhedrin to Lishailu Ba'urim and Batumin only in order that they consult the Urim and Tumim. He's saying maybe the fact that the Sanhedrin is here in this Pasuk is only because there's Urim and Thummim, and you need to have the Sanhedrin there to consult the Urim and Thummim. No one can just do it by themselves. You need to do it before the Sanhedrin. It's a big thing. So maybe that's the reason why you had a Sanhedrin. And you can't learn from here the reason why you had a Sanhedrin is because they were going to war. We want to learn the fact that they needed to have the Sanhedrin there because they're going to war. And therefore you learn out before you go to war you need to consult the Sanhedrin. The Gemara says maybe not. Maybe the Sanhedrin was only there because you were asking the Urim and Thummim. And if you don't ask the Urim and Thummim, you don't need the Sanhedrin. It's not connected to going out to war. It's connected to the Urim and Thummim. So, because of that, the Gemara rejects that line from rejects the suggestion of Rabbi Abahu as the source and looks instead for a different source. So, actually, Baruch Hashem, My wife has my wallet.
They found it?
My wife has it. She says that she hid it when we went out to the tech desk because she was worried it was going to get stolen. Okay. Sorry, I thought my wallet got stolen yesterday when we went to Yamaha Sports ceremony. My kids were doing the flag waving, so we all went to the ceremony. And because 95%, 99%, 100% of the Yishuv is there, so I came back home and I couldn't find my wallet. And I thought that somebody had come in and stolen it because everybody knows that nobody's home, right? Everyone, the whole Yishuv is over there in the square watching the fireworks. So perfect time. So I got up this morning. My wife was out when I left. So I'm looking for my wallet everywhere. And it's gone. It's just not there. I'm turning the place around. I'm trying to text her. She's not answering. I'm like, Top, somebody must have come in last night and taken it while we're in there. Top. Anyway, so she had her phone off. So she just texted me back. No, I put it away so that it wouldn't get.
Oh, that's fine.
Yofi. So Baruch Hashem. That's good. I was about to cancel the card. Plus, today the banks are closed. So I had no money anyway too. So, anyway, Baruch Hashem, everything's good.
Oh, that's a big relief.
It's a big relief.
That's a big, big relief.
There's some stuff in there that would be difficult to replace. Yofi. Thank you, Hashem. Okay, so do we, Gemara rejects that.
You need to say no.
Do I need to say Tehillah? I say thank you, Hashem.
No, because this is a really big thing, losing a wallet and then finding it.
To say the same is more than that.
Tov, it's about to show how we'll do that tonight. Okay, so the Gemara rejects that. Gemara says, it's not so clear. You're right, you could make the argument, but it's a bit fuzzy. You could argue otherwise, and therefore we're going to drop that as the proof. I'm going to try and find a different proof instead. So the Gemara gives us an alternative proof. Let's just remind ourselves, what are we trying to learn? We're trying to learn out the source of our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, if you have a discretionary war, you need to consult the Sanhedrin first. We need to find a source for that war. So Gemara has a different way of proving it. Ella, rather, ki hadamar Rav Acha bar Bizna, rather that thing which Rav Acha bar Bizna said. Amar Rabbi Shimon Hasida. He said it in the name of Rabbi Shimon Hasida. So this is what he said. Kino haya talui lamala mitato shel David. Famously, as we know, there was a harp that was hung above the bed of David HaMelech. Right? You know this? A harp. We don't know what harp. And it depends on which book of Tehillim you look on the front, and they all have a different picture of it was a violin, it was a big harp, it was like a guitar thing, it was tough. Everyone had a different view about what this harp was. But it was a harp, a stringed instrument of some sort, called a kinnor. Right? A kinnor is also used for a harp, is also used for a violin. So it's a kinnor. Anyway, what happened? He would hang it above his bed. Why? When Chatzot Laila came, David HaMelech was a Brezhnev, though you should know that. Waited for Chatzot. So, when Chatzot Laila came,
there's also a pasuk in Tehillim where it says that he'd rather do it under his bed.
Right? He would cry with tears, with pillow. Mm-hmm. Full of tears. He did his brother do it in bed. The biggest advice for anyone who has got insomnia and can't sleep, should do his bodhidut in bed. Because the Yetzer Hara will not let you do his bodhidut. For sure he will send you to sleep like that.
Yeah.
So you just have to start doing his bodhidut, you'll be off. Right? He's not going to let you do his bodhidut. Right? If you find yourself wake and can't go to sleep, start doing his bodhidut, you'll be asleep in no time. Top. Anyway, except if you're David. So what did David Abela? Maybe you're David Abela. So as soon as midnight arrived, Ruach Sifonit, Menashevet Bo, the Ruach Sifonit, the northern wind, would blow on it, and it would play by itself. The wind would come in and play by itself. So, semi-supernatural miracle, right? It would play by itself only because of the wind. Obviously, the wind's not going to, in any normal sense. But often, with miracles, there needs to be some materiality. Hashem, generally speaking, even when he does supernatural miracles, requires there to be some physicality to it. So, for example, in the Gemara, we see the famous story of Elisha, where he tells the woman to bring vessels, and he fills them all with oil. And he keeps filling vessels, and as many vessels as she's got, he fills them up. But she needs vessels, and needs to start with a jug of oil. But it never finishes. He can't take an empty cup and start pouring. He has to take something, and then, right? Even Elisha again, when Elisha revived the dead boy, what did he do? So he had to lie on him and blow into his mouth. Why do you need to do that? He could just sit there and say no. Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, no way. What, blowing into his mouth, he's going to do anything? No, he's dead. He's not going to do anything. But
it's
you have
like,
to have
CPR. It's like CPR in a way.
It's not real. He was dead. But you had to do something. He revived the dead. There's no clue that he didn't do CPR and brought him back. You have to, for miracles. So here too with the harp, right? The harp for sure played by itself miraculously, but the wind needed to blow as if to get it done. We should know that too, for our miracles. For our miracles, the season split till we to Nachshon Ben Adinah. When the greater miracles, the miracles that were done in Mitzrayim through Hashem, Moshe, right? The dust, the kinim. How did all the kinim come? Moshe got a handful of dust and threw it in the air, and it all turned into kinim and went on the whole of Egypt. Why didn't he just sit there drinking his cup of coffee and say no kinim? No, he had to do some. Had to strike the floor, had to strike the sea, had to do something. Apart from the lafa, which Hashem just did himself. And evil Omalach didn't have to do nothing. Hashem went around and killed him. But that was Hashem himself.
But what about modern miracles, such as the Bar Masali?
So again, he pours his arak. He had a bottle full of arak, the Bar Masali. He would wrap it in a towel, and he would pour. But he started with a bottle full of arak. It didn't start with an empty bottle.
But it would constantly pour.
Uh-huh.
That's the open miracle. Or the miracle
the,
with the...
They're all hidden miracles.
The hidden miracle.
They're hidden miracles.
Or the miracle with the Arab taxi driver that they poured water from a hose pipe into his tank.
Right.
And he ran on that for 2-3 weeks.
Right. Yeah, fair. Uh-huh. They still have to do something. They have to pour it in. Pour water and pour everything. Have to do something. Okay. Anyway, so that's what
we're not even talking about the open miracles of 48, 67. Gods of War.
You're right. Okay, so what are we learning here? So we're learning that at midnight, the northern wind would blow. Rashi explains that the different winds come at different times of the day. And exactly at midnight, it's also a miracle that exactly at midnight the northern wind would blow, it would wake him up. So what would happen there? Miyad, immediately, Hayad David Omed Va'ostek B'Torah. David HaMelech would get up and he would busy himself in Torah. Ad She'aleh Amud HaShachar. Right? Why didn't he do Tikkun Chatzot? Busied himself in Torah. Why didn't he do Tikkun Chatzot? No Tikkun Hatzot to do. They haven't got the Beit HaMikdash yet. Tikkun Hatzot is the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. It hadn't happened yet. So they need to. Right? Learning Torah is dead.
Wasn't he writing Psalms?
So the Gemara over here says that he was studying Torah. Aya omed v'oset v'Torah ad she'ala amud hashachar. He would get up and learn Torah until dawn. Kevan she'ala amud hashachar, when dawn came, nichnasu chochmei Yisrael etzlo. The wise men of Israel would enter to him. They would come in, right? They would get up. At dawn, they would come up, get up and come and see him. Amrullah, they said to him, so this was one time, on one occasion they said to him, they say this every morning, I think. On one time, Amrullah, they said to him, Adonainu Amelech, Adonainu Amelech, our king, our leader, our king. Amcha Yisrael tzrichim lefanasa. Am Yisrael need panasa. We've got a problem at the moment. Am Yisrael are suffering. They don't have a lot of panasa. Amalahem, so David HaMelech said to them, Lechu behitparnasu zebizeh. Go and hitparnasu zebizeh. Let this one support that one. You're right, there are people suffering. But my advice is, those who have should support those who don't. Zem, zem, one another, they should support each other.
Like you're just saying, we do business together, no? Work out, you know, who works for you, we'll pay money.
Or pay money, or give to each other tzedakah to support them. Lefarnes doesn't necessarily mean to do business. We use it, generally speaking, to mean to go and do business. But lefarnes just generally means to support. Provide the needs. So provide the needs for the people. So that's what King David suggested. That each one should provide for the other. Amrullah, they said back to him, Eina komets masbia et ari. The unfortunately, they said to him, Eina komets, the comets, what's a comet? Anyone know comets is? Kmitza. Kmitza? Ring a bell?
Some rain, kind of food.
Kmitza is?
Yeah, milka. Yeah, or you pick up from the milka.
Yeah, fair.
That you keep on the altar.
Yeah, fair. So when you make the mincha sacrifice, what's the mincha sacrifice made of?
Flour
and oil. No, no oil mixed together. And what happens to it? So the Kohen, so the Kohen takes a handful and sprinkles it on the altar, and the rest that goes through it. So what does he take a handful? He doesn't stick his hand in. No, he takes a kmitza. What's a kmitza? So kmitza is a special way of taking a handful. What you do, you take your two fingers, your two middle fingers, and you scoop up. And whatever you take in your finger, what finger? Two fingers. It's whatever you take. In there, that's the kmitza. It's a special amount. Whatever's inside there, that goes up. Right?
That's what, the equivalent of a teaspoon.
No, it's a bit more. It's more like a
tablespoon.
Yeah, at least it's like, yeah, you can scoop up quite a lot between those.
3 teaspoons equals a tablespoon.
We're not doing your cooking now. So, okay, so that's called a kmitza. Now, interestingly, in English. What are these things called? Fingers. In Hebrew, they're not called fingers. In Hebrew, Baruch Hashem, everyone has its own name. Right? So we've got a thumb, so but everything it's got as a finger. We call it first finger, middle finger, maybe, but they're called fingers. Not in Hebrew. What are they called? So we should know what fingers you've got. Agudal, thumb. I'm going to have to remember them now. Etzba. The word finger, etzba, refers to the main finger. The first etzba. Next one, amma. Why is it called amma? Because you measure from there to there. That's an amma. Next one, kmitza, because that's the one you use to do the kmitza with, right? Together with the middle finger. Kmitza. And this one, zeret. They all have a different. They all have their own special name, and each one's important. It's got a different job to do. So you give it a different name. Zeret is for it's the little finger.
Why is it called
Zeret? Don't know. No idea. Have to look it up. Kosher Google Zeret. Why it's called Zeret. But everyone has a different job, so they all have different names. So the Kmitza is for the comets. So here, the wise men reply to King David. Say, Eina comets, the comets, that small amount. Eina comets, masbia et ari. That a comet can't satisfy a lion. Apparently that's a phrase. The comet doesn't satisfy the lion. Right, they said to him. Okay, meaning what?
So lot of poor people, and it's just not enough.
There's not enough to go around. Right? They get you sure. Then we can ask them to provide, but they're going to provide. A comet is not going to be enough for them. And they're like, maybe also they're like an Ari. What's an Ari? An Ari is angry, wild. He's not going to just take it like that. You could say, Eina comet masbia et a para. A comet doesn't satisfy a cow. No, it doesn't satisfy the cow. What's a cow going to do? It's going to get upset. It's going to get fool.
I think it's just a Lashon Guzman. It's extreme language.
It's extreme language, but maybe the Ari is not going to be satisfied. The people aren't going to be satisfied. It's not that it's not going to be enough. They're not going to be happy. They're going to be.
I understand. The Sanhedrin comes to the other and says, they're hungry. They like lions. What would the lion do when it's hungry? Go to the war. That's not the reason.
He's going to jump on the table. He's going to wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And demand his...
Your lions, yeah. What happens to your lions when they get hungry?
Yeah, but
they're not satisfied. He's got lions.
No, usually there's...
Smaller ones. Smaller, furry ones.
You know, 9 kilos, 10 kilos.
How many?
They're not so small. Right.
How many?
I have 5.
5. 5 lions.
What do you live? You live like... Right.
They're large kittens.
They're related. Some of them think they're still in the jungle.
But they wake us up at 3 o'clock in the morning demanding their quarter can of American cat food. And
they're not satisfied with the comments either, right?
And then this is after we already give them a full bowl of dry cat food when we go to bed.
Oh. Okay, so that's what they said. So apparently that wasn't enough. Or either it was enough for King David or it's not enough for us, because they also said the, and they also said Ein habor mitmale b'chuliato. Ein habor, the bor, the pit, is not mitmale, filled up with its own dirt. What does that mean? What does it mean, the pit's not filled up with its own dirt? What does that mashal mean?
A pit cannot fill its own dirt.
If you dig a pit, then what you dug out of the pit is not enough to fill it back up again. You're going to have an empty space. What does that mean over here?
You need more.
There's not enough. In pshat, simple, very simple, it's not enough. Yes.
Every reason why they... Why the nation has no food.
Okay.
So it's easy, it's not food to say go to war.
He's going to say, you're right, he's going to say that.
But how they act, the Sanhedrin. So the king answers back how they act. So when the lion's hungry, go to war.
He says that in the end, he says if it's not enough for you. He says, King David says, ideally, we're going to see now, King David says, okay, so go to war instead. Right, we're going to learn from here that they went to war, and that's how we learn the proof. But initially he says to them, no. He says, people are not going enough. First of all, sort it out amongst yourselves, so to speak. It's not his first choice, even though David was known for his wars.
Yeah, no, I understand. But we learned before, there's only 2 weeks left to go to war. You cannot go to war because you're hungry.
Why not? We're learning here, a discretionary war. We're learning in the Mishnah, that the Mishnah tells us there is...
Famine in Israel.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
I go to Syria right now,
that's why we're going to the Sanhedrin. That's why...
Yeah, but
so we have to check with 71 of the greatest sages in Israel before you go and do something like go to war. Not just because you woke up this morning and the king of Syria sent you a nasty letter that arrived this morning and you read it, he said, right, I'm going to get him. How dare he not call me by my full title? Right, or whatever the king gets upset with and decides to go to war. Okay. No, he's got to go to the Sanhedrin and make a case, and the Sanhedrin has to agree with him.
The King David acted like them. Because Sanhedrin compares Israel like lion. Or compare like a war.
Okay.
So, when you complain Israel like lying. So what is lying? His nature.
I hear. It's interesting, right? Because a lion has a nature. Also, a boar. Boar also has two different meanings. Boar means a pit, but a boar also means an unlearned person. Right? Person with no Torah learning is a boar. Well, there may be something in that too. But that's where the nation's holding. They're not holding at a level where they can rely on their
own. Maybe they were all poor because they were bulls, you know.
Right. And if they haven't, so they have to go up to Kilu, they have to Rav Arish and others often say that a person needs emunah to have panasah. And if you haven't got enough emunah, so you have to go out and work, get a job. You haven't got the emunah to hold by the fact that Hashem is going to give it to you anyway. If you're not holding at that level, there's no point pretending you are and killing yourself, your wife, and everyone around you, because you're not there. You can't stand by that. You're freaking out. So you have to go work. So maybe you could say also something here too. If they were holding at the right level, they wouldn't have to go out to war to get their... That's what they have to do to get panasan, to get money and land, whatever they need. Right? So here, David says, the people, they can get one from another. Kilo. And the advisor come back and says, the king, you should know they're not holding at that place. They're really not there.
No,
so he says, so they have to go out to war.
You have the feeling like they act like they are. Maybe they come with their own question.
Why? They're the wise men of Israel. So that's what Hashem put as the...
That time was the king David.
Oh, but they came, that's why they came to him. They said, the people are hungry. What should we do? So they go to the king, and the king says the answer what to do.
Yeah, they say, go to the rich man, the rich man, go to the poor. Like, you support your neighbor.
Right.
But there's reliance, and there's not enough.
Right, obviously here the rich people too are lacking in emunah, because otherwise they would be giving. Right, and so the wise men come back and say, actually they're only going to give a little bit. They're not going to give. There should be enough. Right, King David presumably has the understanding that that's a good piece of advice. He doesn't give an advice that can't work, that's just dumb. They're not going to say to him, but wait a minute, it's just a dumb piece of advice, look around you, there's no way to feed everyone here. No, it might be a good piece of advice. Actually, if they would all give to each other, they would be fine. But they come back and say, no, they're only going to give a little bit, a comet's full.
So
it's not going to work.
That's the Shalom. They have no...
Who?
The Sanhedrin. Because they answered for the rich people. Not the rich people.
No, maybe they're just telling the truth. They're saying this is what's going to happen. If you go and tell the rich people to give, they're not going
to
give.
Go to the rich people and say, listen, you give now.
And then
you trust on us. Why? They trust in you too. They say, we go to war. Okay, we trust in you.
You see from here that people would rather go to war than give up their money. It's not such a crazy idea.
Look at the story of Elisha.
Yeah.
I said before, there was no camel, and he said to the woman, bring all the pots that you have to put on your neighbor.
She had nothing. She had nothing. That's why she believed in him.
So
if he went to the rich man, and said to the rich man, give all your money to this woman and everything will be fine, trust me. No chance. Not going to happen.
Why do you believe the thing for the rich people?
Because that's reality.
Maybe there is rich people.
No, but we say here, no. The Gemara is telling you that the wise people at that time said it's not going to happen.
The rich people are big inside,
I would imagine,
no?
Very difficult. Very difficult. We know there's many stories that poor people give a lot more than rich.
Yeah, rich people don't.
They don't.
That's why they're rich.
They're rich, but it's not why they're rich. It's not why.
No, but there's an element to it. They don't suddenly become poor.
They're rich because I should have made a bit. But in terms of giving, it's very hard. It's very hard to give when you have a bigger yetzara. When you don't have money, much money, you don't have a big yetzara. Take out. Anyway, okay. So what happened here? So the wise men came back and said, no, it's not going to work for two reasons. either because the rich people are not going to give, or they said there's not enough, even if they did give, the second answer, there's not enough to go round. The earth from the pit is not enough to fill the pit. It depends how you understand that. It's not so clear how to understand that, but that's one way of understanding it. Amalahem, he said to them, King David said back to them, Lahu pishtu yideichem begudud. Go and spread out your hands, put out your hands, begudud. A gudud is a legion, an army unit. So what does it mean? It means go against the legions. So here the way our school want to say explain it, it means go against the foreign legions. You could say go pull out your hands to our army, that they go to the army and let them go to war. But here he's saying no, he's saying that the army that they're talking about is the other. Go spread out your hands against the other legions. Right? It means go fight. So the Gemara says, Miyad Yoatzin Ba'Achitofel. Immediately they consulted Achitofel, right, who was one of the advisors of the king. V'nimlachim, the Sanhedrin, and they consulted also with the Sanhedrin. V'sho'alim ba'urim turim, and they also asked the Urim and Turim. So again over here, just like we saw in the Pasuk, they also consulted with Achitofel, the Sanhedrin, and the Urim and Turim. Okay, so we're going to go to there because it's 10 o'clock. But we're going to see, Bezrat Hashem, how each of those things represent something like they did before, and how we learn out from here that they consulted the Sanhedrin. Because the Sanhedrin is not even mentioned. Right? They consulted Achitofel. They consulted the...
Sanhedrin?
I know, they did. They consulted the Sanhedrin. They consulted the Urim and Thummim. So we have the same question.
It looks like under footnote 41... that they had the same problem that we do now with the push team, the invaders, the Palestinians, causing a total balagan, and they went to war, and we need to go to war to drive out the invaders and help.
Only after you consult the Sanhedrin.
Yes, only after.
We're not talking about the Sanhedrin over here. It's not them.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. It is. It is. It is the Sanhedrin.